This is HPR episode 1886 entitled, Moral Volcanoes Linux Tips and Tricks Podcast for Hacker Public Radio. It is hosted by first-time host Moral Volcano, and is about 65 minutes long. The summary is, a collection of Linux tips and tricks that may be useful new users.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by anhonesthost.com. Get 15% discount on all shared hosting with the offer code HPR15. That's HPR15. Better web hosting that's honest and fair at anhonesthost.com.
Podcast, I will try to cover all kinds of free and open source software, not just new Linux podcast. So initially I will start with UI, user interface. For some reason Linux developers don't give much attention to how the desktop looks, it seems. There are some attempts like elementary OS where they have tried to make it look very pretty. But with GNOME 3, people have tried to pay more attention to the aesthetic aspect of the desktop. But what they have done is they have made it less useful. The desktop that I use is GNOME 2, and GNOME 2 was created with a great deal of focus on usability and simplicity. You don't see that in GNOME 3. Or just look at any desktop screenshot that's been published online. It's all the same. Same GNOME 3. There are some people who use KDE. But the GNOME 3 desktop doesn't allow you to customize or change the interface. That was one of the objectives of GNOME 3. Surprisingly, they don't want you to want you means the users. They don't want users to customize the OS and the desktop and make it more useful and to them. And what they justified this by saying that they want a developer curated design that the user should not tamper with. That was the justification they gave. And to make this to ensure this is done, because they felt that users were stupid or users shouldn't have too many liberties, they removed all forms of customization that was available in GNOME 2. The desktop was managed by Nautilus file manager in GNOME 2. And the Nautilus that was there in GNOME 3 does not have any features. They removed features from GNOME 3 and Nautilus. So if you go to edit preferences, there is not much you can do there. So what kind of upgrade is that? When you, okay, here I would like to say that what I'm going to say maybe opinion, you shouldn't just accept it as it is or whatever you you should always trust your own judgment. Just because somebody is saying, you shouldn't let go of your native intelligence and good sense. Usually when somebody says something, when you read an article or when you listen to someone in some event, they might usually say something so shocking, challenging existing beliefs that you start believing whatever they say. There must be a nagging doubt in the corner of your brain where you think maybe that guy is not saying, whatever he is saying is not correct, it's not true. But the force with which this guy is saying makes you think that, yeah, that guy, whatever he is saying is correct. Now, you shouldn't, later, sometimes you do realize that whatever he had said was wrong, but this realization happens much later, and you do remember that you felt that there was something wrong with the assertion. You had that doubt, but you let that guy bamboozle you. You thought he was right and you were wrong. You discounted your own judgment and let some guy take over your fine judgment. So I may be wrong, and you should always rely on your own judgment. So anyway, this GNOME 3, those guys felt that users shouldn't be customizing their wonderful desktop, and they created a desktop that had less features. So I've been using Windows desktops from Windows 3.1, 95, 98, Millennium, 2000, XP, and then I did not work with Windows Vista. I stayed with Windows XP for a long time, even though Microsoft had released Windows 7. I was with Windows XP because I could always change the desktop theme to the Windows Classic, and the computer was fast and it got things done. I did not like Windows 7. I got a laptop with Windows 7, and I had the option of installing Windows 8 because I have a MSDN license, so I can install any OS from Windows. I don't think I had a Windows Millennium, but Windows XP, Windows Vista, Windows 7, Windows 8, any of them, and Windows Server also. I could install any version of Windows on my computer. I decided to install just Windows 7 because anyway the drivers were all for Windows 7, not for Windows XP, so there was no point of installing Windows XP. So in all these versions of Windows, they never removed features. All the features that existed earlier were there.
In Windows 8, Microsoft did remove features from Windows Explorer, the desktop manager.
Even with Linux, they did not remove features. And one of the justifications that GNOME 3 guys said was, gave us, that when GNOME 2 was released, it had lots of bugs and people complained about it, and eventually it became better, and that is why GNOME 3, there are complaints about GNOME 3. Even a lot of people complained about GNOME 3, and but like Linux, Linus, who is that guy who created Linux? Kernel? Linux Pauling? Oh, that guy. So even he did not like the GNOME 3 desktop, but they went ahead with they published some extensions with which people could add functionality that should have been originally available in the desktop, that is Nautilus, the file manager. And it was really a stupid desktop that they provided, and making things optional means the regular user doesn't get to see how great a desktop could be. So why would you do something like that? So I had used Red Hat 7 or some old version on my home computer. The graphics card wouldn't allow GUI to boot up. So, and later I moved to Mandrake. Mandrake had better support for the AGP card that I had done. It finally booted into GUI. Red Hat booted into console only. X did not initialize there. But But the default experience that I got from Mandrake was whatever they shipped with the CD, that ISO. So there wasn't much I could do. Initially, the sound card was not detected. Later, it did work with the sound card, and I could play MP3 files. But there was no, I couldn't make it work with the modem. It couldn't dial the internet. So there wasn't a lot I could do. Later, several years later, I had a chance to look at an Ubuntu system. And this guy was running Windows XP inside the Ubuntu computer. And he was running a VM. So I was really surprised how much Linux had developed, that it could do so many things. So that day I went home and installed Ubuntu, and everything worked. The graphics card got detected, the sound was detected, even the modem I could I had a USB wireless modem. It worked means it worked better than in Windows. So Ubuntu was great in the initial years that I used it. The software that I used was WVDIAL for these USB 3G, 4G modems. There was a, after you configure it, you can make it work. You can use the GUI version of WVDIAL. It was gnome-ppp. It would let you use a variety of modems. And another thing is, the tip with that I would like to give is with regards to WVDIAL and GNOME PPP is that it supports a wide variety of modems, and it has an option called stupid mode, and when you select it, it just starts working. So whichever modem you have, it finds the default and it starts working after that. Later, with each version of Ubuntu, they added similar functionality for in the LAN manager also. So you could make the 3G modem work with the network manager, the GUI version. But that tended to be, since wireless connections get are flaky, they get disconnected, and the network manager will not be able to reinitialize the modem and get connected again. But WVDIAL and GNOME-PPP does not have this problem. If your modem fails, it just restarts, reinitializes everything, and you get connected automatically. So all those who have these 3G devices, modems, they should use WP dial and GNOME PPP. That's the software that I recommend. That's my tip. And yeah, as I said, the throughput speed will be better than what you get in Windows. And coming back to the desktop user interface, GNOME 3 guys decided, I wanted to say about GNOME 3 guys have contempt for users, and they created a desktop that could not be customized, and it was not very usable also. One of the things that they did was to design feature from a copy a design feature from Mac desktops, where there is a single menu for all applications. You open an application in and move it to the bottom right corner. You have to go all the way up to the top left corner to access it. You know. Mac users, for some reason, think it is great, and when they see that in GNOME 3, they say, "Oh, this is very wonderful. I like it. This is how it should be." It's a stupid design. Why should you move your mouse all the way across the screen to change a window that's there? If the menu is there on that application, you don't have to move your mouse a lot. So another thing that before this change happened, even Ubuntu did the same thing. They moved the minimize, maximize, and close buttons from the right hand corner of the title bar to the left hand corner. That they justified that because they wanted Mac users to feel comfortable. Yeah, but that was not a big problem. People who had been using GNOME 2 were initially perturbed by it, but it was not a big deal. But making a common menu for all applications and forcing people to move to the top left corner was really a stupid design decision. And so what if Mac users did it every day? Why would you want to copy a bad design from somebody else when you have something working great already? But GNOME 3 developers went with it anyway. So I did not like GNOME 3 at all. And when the developers show contempt to users, there is no need to support them as well. You should take a decision and go on another way. I really had no choice in this matter. So I stuck with Ubuntu 10.10, the Maverick Meerkat version. I had a good firewall called Firestarter, which I had mentioned earlier. Even though I was running an old version of the OS and old kernel, it is supposed to be bad to run old, dangerous to run an old kernel, but I had no problem because I had Firestarter. Firestarter is a firewall that was available until 11.04, I think, of Ubuntu. After that, they made so many changes in the networking system that Firestarter did not work well. Firestarter is a firewall. It's a front end to the IP tables internal firewall. So all the changes that you do in Firestarter just modify some settings in IP tables. IP tables is the default firewall in Linux, I think, or at least in Ubuntu. So the Ubuntu comes with another firewall called UFW, I think, uncomplicated firewall or some simple firewall something. It's not a really good front end for IP tables. I did not like it because it had no events. It didn't show active connections. There are not a lot of options that you could do. It was basically, as the name says, uncomplicated, and there was not a. It was meant for very simple, uncomplicated users probably. But Firestarter was not like that. It had lots of options. It could, so when you have several applications connecting to the net, it would show those connections and it will show which port is connecting. I mean, which application is connecting from which IP to which IP on which port. It would show all those applications. And there'd be an events tab where it will show connections that are blocked. So this would tell you the IPs from which the connections are being made. So you could take further action. Those block connections were very useful. Say you are connecting from another computer and you wanted to find its IP. The block connections would show the IP. And you just added that IP to the list of hosts from which connections could be accepted. There was another tab in Firestarter where you could specify the IPs, I mean the hosts from which connections could be made, to which connections could be made, and you could specify in the last tab, you could specify all those ports. There was a another set of options called whitelisting and blacklisting. You could either whitelist certain ports to which connections could be made, or you could blacklist specific ports to which or from which connections cannot be made. So FireShooter had all these options. So I installed FireStarter and I stuck with Maverick Meerkat for several years. It is running without any problem for in several of my laptops and one desktop. But I would like to move to the latest version. Yeah, and so if you missed GNOME 2 and GNOME 3 is something you just had to live with because you wanted to use the latest distribution, then you don't have to use GNOME 3. There is a fork of GNOME 2 called the Mate Desktop. You could Linux Mint, which is a Linux distribution based on Ubuntu, has a version that comes with a desktop called Mate Desktop. Mate Desktop is a fork of GNOME 2. Since another thing that these guys got to do was stop all development of GNOME 2. So when GNOME 3 was developed, they said we are not going to develop GNOME 2, and we are going to migrate a lot of applications. Those applications would no longer work with GNOME 2. So users did not have a great deal of choice. They had to accept them. They were forced to accept them. But this Mate Desktop, I discovered it much later than I would have liked. It's a drop-in replacement for GNOME 3. It has the same, it has its own, the desktop that ships with Linux Mint comes with a menu system that is different from the GNOME 2 menu. You need not use that menu. You just delete it from your desktop and add new panel and add delete the Linux Mint menu from your Mate Desktop, and then add the GNOME 2 menu or the fork GNOME 2 menu to the panel, and it looks exactly like GNOME 2. The reason for this Mate Desktop is the Nautilus file manager, the shell, manages the desktop, and the GNOME 3 guys use the same name, Nautilus, and made a lot of changes to it so that it wouldn't work with GNOME 2. So the Mate Desktop guys, they created a replacement for Nautilus and called it Kaja, C-A-G-A. And so if earlier if you were typing Nautilus in command line, you would have to type Kaja in the command line. So my other tip in this podcast is to use the Mate desktop and Linux Mint if you did not like GNOME 3. And another program that the Mate desktop had to change was the text editor. Earlier it was G editor. Now it's called Pluma, Pluma, Pluma or Pluma. So if earlier you type something, if you are editing from command line with gedit, you would have to type Pluma and that name and the file name. Yeah, and the next tip that I would like to give is the theme. So if you have the Mate desktop, all the desktop themes, GTK themes that came with GNOME 2 would work with Mate desktop also. So you could go back to all those great desktop themes that you had earlier, and they would work without any problem in Mate desktop. The menu with that I had asked you to add earlier, the GNOME 2 menu, is a very intelligently designed menu. It has three main menus. One is applications, the other is places, the third one is system. So all your applications are in applications. All the places in your file system, in your network, and other places, and your recent documents are all in places, and all options related to managing your system, such as preferences, administration, and shutting down the system, are all in system menu. So if you are on the phone and you want to give directions to somebody, if you are offering troubleshooting advice on the phone, GNOME 2 menu is the best. So that sort of thing is not, you couldn't do that with GNOME 3. GNOME 3 has another stupid feature that they copied from Mac is that they have one search feature. You want to type if you want some application, find some application, you type its name in the search box and it will show some options and you click on that. So that means you will have to take your hand off the mouse to type this. It also prevents you from exploring the system by just browsing the menu. So, why would they do this? Anyway, Mac, because of Steve Jobs. I have written an article about Steve Jobs. He is a He was not. Okay, I'll just give you the link. You just see it. Anyway, I don't know why people copy. Think Mac is a great system and all kinds of features need to be copied from there when you already have a great system in GNOME 2. So this when you install Linux Mint with Mac desktop, you remove the Mint's menu and add the GNOME 2 menu. The first thing I would do after this is to install the themes, and the Mac desktop supports all the themes that was available with that are supported in GNOME 2. The theme that I always use is Nimbus theme. Nimbus theme was created by, I think, Sun was bought by, wait a minute, yeah, Sun was bought by Oracle. So this Sun Solaris, Sun had an operating Unix-based operating system called Solaris, and they had this Nimbus theme developed for it. Or I think they released an Solaris-based open source distribution called Open Solaris and made Nimbus the default theme there. This Nimbus theme is a beautiful theme. It is extremely usable. I don't know why most users are like this. Whether it is GNOME 2 or GNOME 3, people don't change the theme at all. First thing I do after installing a system, whether it is Windows, I change the theme to what I think looks best. Looks best means you should be able to find stuff easily with just a glance. If you have to take more than half a second, it's too long. See, in Windows XP and Windows 7, they made so many changes to the theme that it became very difficult to find stuff. So what I would do in those operating systems is I would change to the Windows Classic theme, and it would become infinitely more usable. GNOME 2, before I discovered Nimbus theme, I would change the theme that was there. The default theme that Ubuntu or whichever operating system came with was totally depressing. And that was one of the reasons why people wouldn't like Linux. So, if you are using a Linux system, make it look good. Change the theme. If somebody else comes and takes a look at your desktop, they should appreciate it. They should marvel at it. They shouldn't find it less beautiful than their Windows system. Another thing that I would install after the theme was the, what is it called? Comp is a desktop manager, which would add a lot of desktop effects. So it would make the Linux desktop infinitely more useful and a pleasure to use than a Windows system. Yeah, anyway, this Nimbus theme came with OpenSolaris. And when this was released, was about to be released, this Steve Jobs guy, he called for a meeting with some company officials. And he told them that the theme, the look and feel, seemed to copy or imitate a lot of stuff from Mac, and if they went ahead with releasing it, Apple would sue Sun. And Jonathan Schwartz, I think, was the CEO of some top position in Sun. He has made this meeting. Yes, mentioned this. He has written a blog post about this. You can go to his website and see. He threatened Sun with a lawsuit based on the theme and other stuff that he thought was Mac or Apple's property. Then Sun officials, around this Jonathan Schwartz, he said, hey, you copied a lot of stuff from Sun, and we would also like to sue you. How would you like that? And Jonathan Schwartz says that it was a short meeting after that. Even Bill Gates, I think he said Bill Gates also tried to do the same thing. Or Steve Jobs says that his motive was to maximize the return from intellectual property, and he left Sun to do whatever they wanted to do with the OpenSolaris distribution. So the Nimbus theme came with it. It is also part of Java applications, I think. So it's a great thing. I tried to install OpenSolaris on my computer, but I couldn't install GNOME PPP. GNOME PPP or WPDL does not exist in Solaris. Yes, that's what I found in some forums. So without internet, there was not much I could do, continue with OpenSolaris. But I like the thing very much. So I did a search to see if the theme could be installed in my GNOME to Ubuntu desktop. And some guy had created a GNOME theme for Ubuntu as well. I mean the Nimbus theme for GNOME 2. This comes in two dev files. One contains all the icons, the other contains the theme files. I wish all Linux users install this theme, and because it will make your desktop look very beautiful, and also make it very usable also. The minimize, maximize buttons are all in different colors, and the window colors are all different. I customize even that. I use a combination of this Nimbus theme dev file. It has three different themes. One is the light Nimbus, and the regular Nimbus, and then a dark Nimbus. I choose the dark Nimbus for the title, and then use Windows decorations from another theme that I think is has better usability. this GNOME theme is not was made available in the gnomelook.org website. It used to be available, but it is not available anymore in those links on the GNOME Look website. So I will provide my links from a file sharing site. So I would like I would also like users to ask the Mate distribution guys to include it as the default thing for their so maybe we should ask the Linux Mate people, Linux Mint people. So please install this Nimbus theme. The desktop looks very beautiful after this. And I think comp is settings also work after this. Install Compass. Compass is a desktop special effects. It is a set of collection of desktop effects. Then it can do a lot of when Windows Vista was introduced, it had that something called Arrow Glass view, where you could see a cascade of all your open windows. In a collage, Compass does that, and it looks much better than what Windows Vista did or Windows 7. And it's just not that, it has several other stuff like desktop cubes, where you press Alt Tab and your workspaces start rotating. They have several kind of effects. Instead of rotating, it would move to the left or it would move to the right. It's all some gimmicks, but when somebody else sees your computer, they'll be impressed. And when you are recommending Linux, you should show this, demonstrate this stuff and say Linux is not a dull, difficult operating system. It looks great. It can do a lot of stuff. And another great thing about Linux is that the GNOME 2 desktop is that workspaces. You could have an unlimited number of desktops, and you play some windows in a desktop, you open new windows in another workspace, and you can move between workspaces. Not all the open windows need to be on the panel or in a single workspace. You can always move between these workspaces. And you have to configure Compass. Compass is a bit difficult software. You have to do a lot of search, trial and error to get it right. I always use the key combinations, control, shift, arrow keys to move between these workspaces. And I also use mouse bindings in some corners so that I can just move my mouse there. And immediately it will show the desktop cube or the Windows collage. It will allow me to shift between various workspaces or the various windows. So for example, if I'm pressing Alt Tab, it will let me choose between windows in the current workspace. Or if I press the Super Plus Tab, that is the Windows key plus the tab key to show me windows from all workspaces. And I could choose any some window to go to that workspace, and I could start working from there. So Compass is something that you should install after installing the Mate desktop. Compass requires a good graphics card. Most laptops and computers that come today can handle it. There is no issue. So the Linux tips that I had given today is wgdial and nopdb. Second one is install Mate desktop, which is a fork of GNOME 2. You don't have to stick with the GNOME 3 and Surfer. You can install, after that you can install Compass. It works with Mate desktop. And the other tip was installing Nimbus Team. And before I go, I would like to give one more tip. This is regarding the command time, the GNOME terminal. Usually, the GNOME terminal shows black text on white, I think. That's not very, very good for your eyes. You go to preferences and change to green on black. It would look much better. And I have I have published a GNOME tip in my Ubuntu article. It is a line that you have to add to your bash rc file. The bash rc file is there in the home folder. It starts with the dot bash rc, bshrc. You have to add that line to the to this file. You have to open it in the text editor, and it sets the ps1 variable used by the terminal. what happens in any terminal window is that it shows the username at computer. You can, so that part takes some space. And terminal window is a small window. It takes about 1/3 of a desktop. So there is less space to type your commands. If you are typing a long command, it would wrap. So I have this bash rc setting. I set this ps1 variable. So once you add it, what happens is it shows your username at computer name and also the current date and time in the first line. Your prompt, basically this changes your prompt. The first line shows in the username, computer name, time, and time, that's all. And the second line shows you the current path. And the third line contains just the dollar symbol. So you have an entire line for your command. Try this and you will like it. And another thing that this variable does is it adds some color to your it adds several colors. All these three lines that it adds are in different colors. So you have a multi-colored terminal window. And even the output of commands, they appear in different colors after this. And it looks very good. So you should try it. Don't use the default black on white terminal window. It looks really ugly. And one more tip that I would like to give is to install free fonts that are available. One font that I used to download is the CMU fonts. It was created by Donald Knuth, I think, and it is currently maintained by some Russian guy. CMU is a collection of some 30 plus fonts. They look really good on a Linux desktop. It has there is one font in it which does not look very well on some applications such as browsers and text editor. When I mean text editor, I mean Office, LibreOffice or OpenOffice. But in a terminal window, it looks really great. It has several types of fonts. You should install it. So apart from that, I download all the fonts from the Google Fonts collection. I have published a command line script that could be run, which will download all the fonts from the Google website. And after that, it's a collection of several hundred fonts. People say that you should not install too many fonts in your fonts directory because it will slow down in your boot up, slow down your system. I have installed all the fonts from the Google Fonts collection. What Google has done is they found they searched the web for all free fonts that people have published, and now they have made it part of their website. And people call it Google Fonts. They are not Google Fonts, they are free fonts. Google is just providing them to people. for free. So you can just install that. It does not, on most new systems, it doesn't slow down. If you're using some very old system, then don't use it. So I think this is enough for today. All the scripts, the bash RC variable, and the Nimbus theme files will be available along with this podcast. I think I can sign off now. Thank you, bye.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HBR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.